Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to go ahead and begin. It is 5 o'clock. On behalf of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, I would like to welcome you as guests to our board meeting. Anticipating a higher volume of visitors than is normally received, we have added this opportunity for public testimony to our board agenda this evening. Your voices are important to us. The board expresses gratitude for the correspondence that many of you have already shared, which has been read and is included in our board packet this evening. As our board has not had the opportunity to meet on this topic to date, we will move into an executive session following the testimony and a short presentation by a previously scheduled guest. As we begin public testimony, please consider the following ground rules. Failure to abide by these rules will result in an attendee being ruled out of order and asked to leave. Each speaker will have up to 2 minutes to speak. Adhering to this limit is important, as only 30 minutes are allotted to testimony, and the board would like to hear from as many of you as possible. Only one person is allowed to speak at a time. Comments should be addressed to the board. The focus of the comments should be on issues and solutions. No racial slurs, profanity, personal insults, ridicule, or threats will be allowed. As a volunteer board navigating these topics, we appreciate your care, concern, and constructive feedback. We will now begin public testimony.
Where do I go?
You can remain in your seat, or you may stand if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, I'm Allison Holtkamp, and I've lived in Juneau for about 8 years. I'm a performer in town, and so my opening remarks are kind of in response to the censorship issue. As a performer in town, I have experienced censorship and have been asked to censor myself, and I have censored performances before, and no one has even known this. I have participated in plays where I have been asked to not bare my naked chest because the director chose that that would not be appropriate. I have censored scripts where I have eliminated lines that I felt to be racist, but the audiences don't know that. Now we have all faced a point where censorship has happened on a public level, and I have felt like that's okay. Not saying that censorship is right or wrong, but censorship happens more frequently at the point of distribution than it does at the point of reception. And this type of censorship rarely leads to protests because outsiders rarely hear about it. On the subject of cultural appropriation, I was personally offended by the piece. I know Beth, and I know that it wasn't her intent to do that, but I do agree with pulling that piece the second night. When I was in college, directed a play, and there was a geisha character in it, and I cast a white woman to play that part. I had no idea that what I was doing was harmful, and I found out afterwards that it was. So I feel like we are all in an opportunity and facing a chance to learn from this, and growing pains are hard. Thank you.
Thank you. I did just want to take a moment to remind folks, and I apologize that I didn't say this before your comment. Scott Burton is here from K2 and is recording the public testimony today. My apologies. Who's next on the list? Who's next on the public testimony list, please?
I'm Melissa Griffiths. I've been a Juneau resident for almost 11 years now. As an artist and as a human, I have made mistakes, not intentionally, but what mistakes are intentional. The truth is, our intentions do not determine the results or the reactions. I felt personally attacked when my participation in cultural appropriation was pointed out. I felt like I was being called a racist, and racist was the worst thing I could imagine being called. Luckily, it was 100% within my power to learn, grow, and make different decisions in the future so that I could move from a place of unintentionally causing harm to a place of intentional respect. This was my journey as an individual, as someone who seeks to be an ally to the marginalized. Today, I'm here to encourage the staff and board of the council to commit to a similar journey at an institutional level. As an authority on the arts and culture, the council has a great responsibility to artists and to the community. I believe part of that role is to educate and guide artists, to challenge artists to reflect on their art and how it affects the community. I believe this will lead to better art and a stronger community. Including cultural sensitivity in our process is not censorship or constraint. It's a challenge to be more creative, more educated, and more in control of the impact of our art. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next on the list, please?
Saul.
All right. I wanted to talk about two things. One is about Orientalism, and if anybody's interested, I don't have 2 minutes to give a quick definition of Orientalism, but I did read the introductory chapter of Edward Said's book on Orientalism, and I highly suggest everybody familiarize themselves with Edward Said's notion of Orientalism, because that's kind of what we're dealing with. It's not just a matter of cultural appropriation, more broadly speaking, but it's a matter of Orientalism, more specifically speaking. I have heard Nami speak quite eloquently about the violence that is engendered by Orientalism. She has this beautiful poem called The Most Beautiful Women in the World. It's an intense poem. I've seen her read it out loud before, and it teases the audience, and then she reads it out loud, and what gets articulated is her own experiences with sexual aggression that is enabled by a rampant exoticism and Orientalism. So the concern for Orientalism is directly linked to concrete instances of violence, and that's why it has to be exposed for what it is. But I think we can do that without scapegoating particular artists or scapegoating particular kind of models, because Orientalism is a species of racism, and it infects our entire political culture. And because of that, I think bringing back issues of intentionality aren't robust enough features of our conversation, because none of us are ever in control of our own intentionality. The great literary theorist Roland Barthes says, every artist returns to their creation as a guest. Right? Because we don't control the meaning and the codes and everything that our art signifies. We return to our art as a guest. And I'm hoping that artists who come to the realization that artwork might be caught up in Orientalism can have the wherewithal and the ability to listen and understand, the roots of this kind of injustice. Thank you.
Thank you, Saul.
My name is Patrick Race. I'm a filmmaker, illustrator, gallery owner, and I'm also a member of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. I'm just looking around this room, and I see a lot of really great people here today. I really love this community, and it's hard for me to see our community in conflict, but I think this is a really good conflict. I think that good things will come from this discussion as we approach this idea of cultural appropriation and learn more about it. I think that a lot of what I'm hearing are questions and rudimentary answers, and I think that the Arts Council has taken a good step in, it sounds like you are beginning to form some conversations, some dialogues that will be led by people with experience and expertise in these areas, and I think that by elevating the discussion from the realm of Facebook to the realm of a civil community discussion, you're taking a good step, and I thank you for that. Beyond that, I'm just here to listen.
Thank you, Pat.
David?
Hi, I'm David Russell Denson. I've been doing it since 2000. I want to start off by mentioning that there's this notion that artists can create anything and that privileged people can do anything they want. The idea that art can express anything is entrenched in privilege. that many marginalized people do not have. Culturally appropriative costumes, no matter how well-crafted or aesthetically beautiful, cannot convey histories of marginalization that are experienced by people of color, Asian people, African Americans, Native Americans, other marginalized people. So despite the aesthetic beauty of a specific piece that was entered into wearable arts, and the well-crafted intention of the piece, it was still culturally appropriative. And an Asian costume can't convey histories of internment camps in this country, just like culturally appropriative Native American headdresses can't convey histories of reservations and genocide. Cultural appropriation is especially harmful because whereas costumes can be taken off of privileged people, marginalized people cannot put privilege back on at the end of the night. Yellow face washes off, black face washes off, red face washes off, but the actual marginalized people cannot assume places of privilege the next day after the face paint washes off. So I come with one solution. As artists in this community, if you wish to convey an identity in your art that you don't belong to, reach out to individuals within that community to work with them or to make sure to collaborate or make sure that you're not unintentionally perpetuating stereotypes or causing harm. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
I am mostly just here to hear what everyone says and show my support in standing against cultural appropriation. But I was busy at work, but I did find a quote online that I wanted to share. And it's, "What would America be like if we loved black people as much as we loved black culture? And what would Juno be like if we loved Native people as much as we loved Native culture? If we loved Asian people as much as we loved Asian culture?" And I think that love is, people really love that art piece. I think that loving people is more important. I think it's important that we listen, that we get their ideas, that when they're angry, that we don't call them alienating, that when they're angry, we don't call them divisive. When someone's angry, we listen. And we love them, and we ask them, how can we do better by them?
Erica Bergman.
Hi, I'm an artist and poet here in town. A lot of my work focuses on social issues, mostly feminism. But I just wanted to, I think that a lot of the material we have in our laps and the material that's been shared with us today shows us how hurtful cultural appropriation is, and specifically the stereotypes that were presented in the art piece that was presented on Saturday night and won third place. The stereotypes I'm talking about are that of geisha and dragon lady, which are very manipulated by Western culture and very sexualizing, which makes this an intersectional issue. It's both an issue about race and also gender. So we have a fetishization and a sexualization of the Asian woman, which isn't really, which is so singular and really negates the multifaceted contributions of Asian women to our society and to the world at large. Obviously, it's our responsibility as artists to make work and understand how it can be perceived by the people around us, how it can benefit the cultures that it employs, or how it can harm it. And it is our responsibility as consumers of artwork to also ask those questions and to also wonder whether that work benefits that culture, hurts that culture, perpetuates racial stereotypes that harm those people, or in some ways benefits them, like being educational. That's a really great benefit of having cross-cultural connections. My suggestions for the JAC board would be to examine concept art in the future, perhaps. I know that a lot of people have to submit artwork early. I had to for Her Sisters to make sure that it would go well with their message. Post-cultural sensitivity training. I know that Melissa Garcia Johnson and Christy Unami Erickson just got a $15,000 grant to form a group that would educate people on social issues in the arts. So they would be a really great ally in this. And to consider issuing an apology for allowing it to run in third place, and for allegations that the people who are concerned about this issue might be threatening to the model or to the artist, because I don't think that's true.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Catherine Hatch. I'm Japanese American. When I moved to Juneau just over 5 years ago, my first job was actually here at the Juneau Arts Council. And that's such a blessing, because this is really such a cornerstone of our community, and Juneau would truly be nothing without its arts council. And it became strategic because it launched me right into the middle of our town, and I've been here ever since. Because of that, I have such a strong faith in the JAC, and I really trust that you'll be able to turn this divisive moment into a constructive one that fosters great community discussion and has really become a point of growth rather than a divisive one. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to move forward with this in a positive way. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
I feel so grateful to look at all of your faces. I feel so grateful to be here tonight. I feel so grateful for you, Jack, opening your doors to us, creating space for a conversation, creating space for us to be listened to. It means a lot. And in this act, I know that you're here for us, and I appreciate that. It makes me happy. And I also want to say that here I am as a Filipino descendant, and I am here for you, and it makes me happy. Because I know when we both show up for each other, we get to listen, we get to create our future together. We get to move beautifully into the future. When I look in this room, I see a lot of leaders, I see a lot of wisdom, a lot of knowledge, and I invite you to call on the wisdom that's here to help move beautifully into the future. As one of my teachers says, may we look at racism as having an equal right to our wonder. That it doesn't have to be a time to shrink. It doesn't have to be a time to appraise, to judge, to decide whether it's right or whether it's wrong, whether I am lacking, whether I am, I don't know. I don't know where my words are going right here. But basically, I got like all these smart, prepared people. I didn't write a speech. I just am speaking from my heart right now. And that's all I have. And to go back to this idea of treating this moment with an equal sense of our wonder, I invite you to not shrink, all of us, and to show up, each of us, in our own narrative, in our own hearts, in our own skin, and by standing fully in ourselves to look at the people who are around us. And with that, to move beautifully together. Thank you.
Thank you, Colleen.
Aliza, who very nicely put how to pronounce her name. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Aliza Cosby, and I also just wrote a couple of notes during work. So thank you for having this meeting, and I hope that this will be somewhat articulate. But, as a South Asian American, as a Muslim, as a woman, I just have so many different experiences that, this kind of adds to the list of something that I didn't even experience myself, but that I feel for other people, and that's why I'm here, to show support and just really reiterate and echo all of the previous comments. But I thought I would just focus on a couple of questions that seem to reoccur in my life and in these kinds of situations, which are, first of all, this is just like respect, cultural appropriation. This is just respecting the culture. I really try to come from a place of listening to understand and not to respond, and probably everybody, tries. And that's just something that I've always struggled with, because who better to say what is respectful to, their identity than the people themselves? And also noting that, no one person can speak for an entire group, so it's more complicated than that. But also, kind of echoing what other people have said, if we really respect culture, whether it's art or sports or language, then we should seek to learn more and expand our own knowledge and understanding and distinguish stereotypes. I think, everybody has that responsibility, and, especially for people who are not of the oppressed categories, try to put that on yourself. I'm speaking to myself too, I have privilege too. Try to start with just yourself, not necessarily wait for someone else to convene a dialogue or, what it might be, because I have heard that a lot too, including, I moved here a year and a half ago, I'm from California originally, that, why don't people of color just drive more of these conversations? Well, that's part of it, it's just self-preservation and survival. So that was one question, and the other one would be, if you don't like it, then why don't you just sort of turn away and just not pay attention? If you're unhappy with the artistic expression or whatever and you don't want to consume it, just don't consume it. So again, just to echo other people's comments, that we all wake up like this. We don't have the opportunity to take on and take off privilege. I love that. Thank you for that, And so it's not that simple, as far as like I can ignore certain things that make me uncomfortable or even hurt me. I can ignore them all day, but at the end of the day, art shapes our society, it's a part of our culture, and same with sport and same with language, and that's why you have debates over, are we teaching native languages to our kids in school? Are we really still continuing on with certain mascots of, sports teams? That's why we have those debates. So thank you again, and I think that pretty much covers it. Thank you.
Thank you, Aliza.
My name is Ivan Bailey, and has everyone seen Black Panther? Wakanda forever. So if you haven't seen it, it's based on a comic book. It's a fictional character set, the Black Panther is a fictional character set in a fictional country in Africa. So everything is just kind of made up, except for the costumes. Ruth Carter is the costume designer for that film. And what she did was, rather than just kind of put things together of her idea of what Africa is, she went to the Himbe tribes, she went to the Turek tribe, she went to the Maasai, she went to the Surma people. She went from the north of Africa, Libya, she went to Angola, she went to Namibia, not necessarily going there physically, but she pulled resources from these countries and these people. And from there, she got ideas for clothing, for hairstyle, for just the tribal makeup that these various people in various countries on this huge continent had, and then got mixed it all together and came up with what she called Afrofuturistic. I guess that's kind of a thing right now, the movement. And then applied this to this movie, which was wonderful if you haven't seen it, so you should go and check it out. But what I took from that and from what's been going on with what happened this past weekend was that you don't have to have $1 million Disney or Marvel budget to learn about other people in other countries and other cultures. You know, we now have like the internet, we have social media, we have people, we have so much, and just in Juneau, we have such a rich pool of people from various backgrounds and cultures that we can pull from if you would just reach out and talk and communicate. So with that being said, I think that I wasn't here for where I was, but what Ms. Bolander and Ms. Gross have done, if nothing else, has brought everybody into this room and created the conversations that we're having now. So I think in life, everything can be a lesson. And so with everybody here, and well, I guess we'll find out what that lesson is.
David, these past few days have been difficult to process, and in light of the dialogue surrounding the issue, I am disheartened in every sense of the word. What is disheartening is the way in which steps were taken to protect the artist and not the protection of a marginalized group of people. To see this upward debate now to being splattered on the front page of the Empire and the hundreds of messages flowing through social media, I am disheartened because I had high hopes for this community and the institutions that support it. You may be asking yourself, where is the harm in this? But this harm goes beyond the notion of whether the artists exploited a culture and profited from this piece, or if this was created with ill intent. Neither was committed. But there is still harm in being done if this wrong isn't treated with the utmost respect and dignity. and the harm lies in misrepresentation. Who gets to tell my story? Who would you like to tell your story if you're a person of color? Someone who is Caucasian? Because when protection is given to someone over the potential hurt feelings, it sends the message that for many of us not under this blanket of protection, we have to keep hiding. That our authentic selves are not welcomed or accepted, and that our voices hold no value in this society. Now imagine learning that at a very young age, what that does to your psyche, your self-esteem, and your spirit. And this is the power the board members of the JAC has and the influence and steps it can make towards racial equity and justice, to give a platform for people whose stories are unheard and bring light to stories you don't normally see or have never seen.
As a point of order, may I ask how many names are left?
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Would the board like to extend our time so that we can hear the remaining 8 people who signed up?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you.
Next is Frida Westman. I know I saw her come in.
Thank you. My name is Frida Westman, and I had a piece in this year's art show. And I did speak up during rehearsal to say that this piece was harmful, and my concerns were not heard. And there was dress rehearsal and the show, and it went on above objections. And I want to say that by awarding third place jurors best in show, the actions of the 2018 Wearable Art Show support, condone, and promote cultural appropriation and racism. I also want to say that by describing not why the piece was pulled, or concern for the model and the artist was microaggression, racial microaggression, false, and a red herring to misdirect our attention to the mishandling of this situation. And I also think by wanting a community conversation about cultural appropriation versus censorship is pitting those who spoke out against art, and that isn't so. And I like controversial art. I am an artist and I appreciate it. And thank you for your time.
What is the cook?
tunique.
Awasa.
Jahani kahaya hasua di away with a palm. Konea huha ayam. Achtahas. Achatas. Achtahas. Kaachsihas. At we catch up Padua Ashkucha could kaku ayam. Hashawaki. Hasha. Hasti yahai atina hasa. This is the land of the Akuquan and the Akuquan people. I would argue that most people who live here choose to not even see the people who are here. How many words could you understand of what I just said? This wonderful thing that was made here and that suffers today. We're respectful people because we know there's a spirit inside of everything. So those who are engaging in this conversation and are trying to bully and name call for people standing up to be able to represent themselves, you need to step out of the conversation until you can be respectful to yourself and others. I believe that we can get to a better place, where I can speak my language, and it was born here, so people who live here will be able to catch what I'm saying. From the time that white people first came here, our mothers, our aunties, our daughters, our wives, they begin to disappear. You cannot assume somebody else's image because you don't know how much they've suffered. Especially if you're going to subscribe to things that might sexualize women. The way that women are attacked today at all levels, regardless of any ethnicity, is atrocious. So when we say that art can't be touched by cultural critique, that is 100% wrong. Art is always susceptible to the critique of people. People can engage in discussions without being silenced. Some of the things that I saw were really unfortunate. It's choke collar politics, where people are saying, just be quiet, watch the world go by. We've never done that as Tlingit people. As the former ANS president who spoke before me can attest to with her own life, her own courageous actions. We don't want people stepping into the image of our women. I can only speak on behalf of our people here, but when we see it happen to other people, we say, no, no, you can't do that. So my hope is we'll continue to engage in conversations with love, with respect, and have dialogues to say, okay, this happened. We're not trying to say people are bad. Sometimes people are turning this conversation into about individuals. This person spoke, we have to look at her. This person's hurt because of it. Sometimes I think, boy, if you make a white girl cry, you're just gonna get destroyed. But what's going on here, we have to look beyond that and see the systems. That's what I would hope. I'm here as a resource to you guys to help with any conversations. Learn about this stuff. Learn. Continue to push yourself. You're not someone you have so much agency in this place. Cultures and languages will live and die based partly on your decisions. Yeah, I want to commend everybody who spoke up, especially Nami who spoke up first. I think it's very courageous. I think it's difficult to do. I think you know that people are going to be coming for you. And don't portray advocating for equity and social justice as violence, because we know violence. I know the last time that she spoke up about this, someone said, you know, when people say things about, they say bad things about good people, I want to take that outside and beat it until it can't say anything anymore. That's how people talk about this stuff. You go, Ehwan, have strength and courage. She
Hey, my name is Brandon Howard, and gotta take a moment. Really beautiful, and made me, backtrack a little bit on what I was gonna say, because I had words that I did want to say, but in listening and sitting here in my chair, realized that the best thing for me and the thing that I appreciate the most from this is an opportunity to get to listen and listen to the words that you just shared with all of us. And I want to say thank you to Christy, because it's important to bring these issues to light and have these conversations, because as a person of privilege, and recognizing that, I have a lot to learn from listening and having these opportunities to learn and listen are moving and incredible. And so when something is pointed out to me as being oppressive, when something is pointed out to me as being wrong, I take that as a learning opportunity and an opportunity to listen. And so I found a lot of amazing teachers in this community and a lot of amazing people to present those opportunities. And so I appreciate everybody having this opportunity to be here and listen and speak. So thank you all so much, and thank you, Christy, for bringing this.
Sybil Davis wanted to put on the first wearable arts show, five people from Homer came down, because I came here from Homer and we worked with the community to put it on. And if you get confused about what certain cultures are, you go back in history and you go, well, was that acceptable to paint your face black and be a minstrel singer? You know? And it was at a time, and then it was brought attention to. Same thing, the whole Tlingit history. There was mention of how you have to get permission. Well, the Tlingit people here have a very strict protocol that you follow. And you get permission from the Akwan people who own this land that we are speaking on. And you get permission from the leaders of these different tribes and clans. And you go through that route. It's not one person told my friends that I could do this, you know. And I don't expect that to happen with the Japanese community, which is smaller. And, you know, Asia is 48 countries. So it's not just an Asian person that you can mix and match 10 different things. You would never think of going to the lower 48 and looking at five different Native American tribes and putting a headdress on from one tribe and a a ooh and regalia from another tribe and just mixing it together and then painting the face, you know. And we all know that we wouldn't do that. So you just keep going back and go, oh, did this happen? Did that happen? And then you can kind of get to the answer of what would work. So thanks for everybody. And plus last week was the remembrance of the internment camps for the Japanese people. And a lot of people call them camps, but my daughter's grandparents were there. If you tried to sneak out, which her grandfather did, you were met with guns. So it wasn't camp, you know. So thank you.
Jennifer Kinko.
That's me. I am
to everybody who's here. And thank you to the board for having this meeting. It's not usual that we get this opportunity to meet on something like this or even speak on it. Thank you, Nick, for speaking out. Your words were amazing. I honestly don't think that anybody here in this room tonight is a part of the problem. I think that everybody who came here tonight to show their support or to even be involved is somebody who is willing to move forward and make things right. I especially want to thank the board for giving us the opportunity to speak about it because it is important. We are Juneau. We are home to an indigenous community. One of our biggest battles is appropriation, and that's why we do identify with Christine. It's why we are here to support her, because it is something that we battle consistently, daily. It doesn't matter what your experience of the world is, what you do in your daily life, this is our world. Appropriation is a huge issue in our world. So when we see somebody who is fighting the same thing as we are and somebody who picks up that issue and tackles it with the tenacity and enthusiasm that Christy has, we stand up and we thank her and we are here to support her and we thank the board for giving us the opportunity to speak out on it. None of us are here to condemn anybody or make them a monster or say that they were here to do something terrible to anybody specifically. But what we're trying to open up the conversation for is there are things that go by every single day that people don't even realize that they're offensive, that they're appropriative, that they're derogatory, and that they don't have any connection or personal identification with the things that are being represented. When you're a person who has lived your whole life as invisible, misrepresented, and a whole other gamut of other issues that happen just because you aren't from the dominant part of society, you live your daily life confronting these things, dealing with them, internalizing them. And because we aren't the dominant part of society, we take it in silence and we deal with it on our own. And that's why you see everything that happens in our society spill out. So we thank you sincerely for opening up the conversation. I thank you all for coming and participating and supporting us in it, because that is the most important thing to come out of tonight. We aren't here to make anybody the monster or anything like that. What we want to see from this point forward is change and recognition of what happened to create this instance. We want that to change. We're not trying to vilify anybody. We're not trying to do anything that has happened retroactively. We want to see change from here forward, and we want you guys to know our input and our side of what we have to say and how we feel about it.
Tonight, because you know, we're on indigenous land, land where, as an indigenous person, we're the minority in our own homeland. We face oppression every day.
Oh, what's up, Pete?
And it's hard for us to acknowledge that and to speak to that. And I wanted to hold up Nami for having that bravery as a person who has also experienced oppression to drag it out into the light. And I think that's what we need to do. And I don't condemn the artist, the model, any of these people. I'm actually thankful because it gives us the opportunity for dialogue, to look each other in the eye and express ourselves and share what our hurt is, why we feel hurt, what is oppression. And, you know, I've looked at some of the comments on social media. I find it a little frustrating to see the continual marginalization when we put voice to our hurt, when we express why we're hurt. It's not for the oppressor to tell you you don't have the right to feel oppressed. And I think that goes kind of unrecognized. And so I think as oppressed people, we have to hold each other up. As indigenous people, we have to hold each other up. I don't know NAMI extremely well. I know her well enough to know that she leads with her heart. And I know she's not here because she didn't want to continue to make this about herself. But I am thankful to her for, again, it's time as oppressed people, as folks that deal with historical trauma, whether it's racism, abuse, sexual abuse, we have to pull those dark things into the light. It's the only way we're going to ever stop them. It's the only way we're going to change. You know, I am a great appreciator of art. I think art should be provocative. I think it should cause discussion and dialogue. But I also know it shouldn't be oppressive. And we have to recognize and call it out when we feel that it's oppressive. And so I just want to tell the Jack, I appreciate that you're having this dialogue. I feel that something good will come out of it. But there was hurt. Hurt happened. And we shouldn't shame somebody for having the bravery to stand up for those that don't have the voice to do so for themselves.
Yes.
I'm not standing here so you recognize me speaking. I'm here because so many of my people don't have the voice. They don't have the voice because they continually are marginalized when they do speak up. And I'm here to put an end to that. I want every one of our people who have been abused, have been marginalized, have been oppressed, to know that I'm here to hold them up. As I pray, they hold me up. So I just want to thank you all. I heard beautiful words here tonight. I think great dialogue is coming. But we also have to face those oppressors and let them know we're going to hold each other up.
Swordplay at 6 o'clock.
hard to end. I am just here as a white artist and Juno resident to talk to other white folks because I figure aside from that, my role here would be to listen. I deeply understand that there is a line between celebration and appropriation. And I just want to say that white artists, in our enthusiasm to participate, in our enthusiasm sometimes even about diversity, we get it really wrong where that line is. We can intend to lift up and honor something we see that is so beautiful. We go, oh my God, I've never seen this before. It's the most beautiful art I ever conceived of. Look how beautiful this is. And then we take one step farther and say, I want to participate in that. And you can be invited to participate. But there are protocols and procedures and there are gatekeepers to go through because this doesn't happen in a vacuum. We have such a long history of just walking into everything we want and saying, oh, I'd like that, I'd like that, I'd like that, I'd like that. I'll take all of those things and I'll sell versions of them at Hot Topic. And because of this history, when we walk into someone else's art space, intending even to show love and honor, intending even maybe to diversify what appears on the stage at Wearable Art with very good intentions, we can still cause tremendous pain because it's another instance of saying, unconsciously, everything is mine to play with. I know that we all have to leave this room and go back to being a community and bumping into each other and bumping into people who have just said some real mean stuff on Facebook to each other. We got to figure out how to do that. And I recommend that we start by remembering that individuals in our community can be all trying their best to do the right thing at the same time and still hit each other because there's this history of oppression. that they can all be trying to be kind, trying to be good, trying to do their best and make their best art, and tremendous pain can still come from the flashpoint in between where there was a lack of listening and a lack of understanding. I hope the Jack's Road going forward, as far as what you guys can do, I hope there will be a formal apology. I hope that's not a contentious issue. An apology would go a long way that is an actual apology. And I think it would be okay to apologize to the artists too for allowing them to be put in a situation where they had to suffer that sort of humiliation and the regret of putting thousands of hours into a piece of artwork that turned out to be painful. I'm sure that was not their intention. But that is where the gatekeepers, the institution, steps in and makes a new policy and changes something going forward so that any concerns are addressed much, much earlier in the process. And an artist who is over-enthusiastic and loves their community and wants to make something beautiful doesn't walk into a minefield like this again, that they are directed to who to listen to, they are directed to how to listen, and they are directed to what the context is of putting art, not just in a little side studio, not just sketching something someone else did in your sketchbook for reference, but putting it up on the main stage. That's where I hope the Jack will take their deliberation of what their role is in this.
On behalf of the board, I just want to thank everyone who spoke tonight. You all spoke with courage, and you spoke with wisdom, and you spoke with love. And the most important thing that we as an organization can do right now is listen, and we express our gratitude for you giving us that opportunity. So thank you.